Welcome to the Liver Alone Podcast, the podcast where two nerds who consume a whole lot of horror discuss their favorite pieces of horror media, from movies and TV shows to video games, novels, and everything in between, because this is a spooky world, and we're just thriving in it. I'm your host, Sarah, the survivalist in your slasher friend group that will put up a lasting fight, but inevitably die because only the final girl can survive.
And I'm your host, Ian, the fearless fighter in your slasher friend group that tries to save the day but ends up dying because physical strength just doesn't win in horror.
In today's episode, we're talking about a recent film adaptation of one of Stephen King's short stories, The Boogeyman. Of course, before we begin, I have to do a brief synopsis of the movie. So basically, Sadie and her younger sister, Sawyer, are reeling from the recent death of their mother. They're not getting much support from their father, a therapist dealing with his own pain. When a desperate patient unexpectedly shows up at their house seeking help, he leaves behind a terrifying supernatural entity that preys on families and feeds on the suffering of its victims. We've got another round of trivia, creeping it real. I've been enjoying the trivia recently. I only have three questions this time around. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Question number one, true or false? This movie was not originally set to be released in theaters.
I'm going to say false.
No, it's true.
For real? They weren't going to release it? They were going to do like a Netflix something?
So it was meant to be released straight to Hulu, but the strong reception from test screenings proved to the studio basically that it can be a theatrical release. So they ended up doing that. An important symbolic animal in the King universe is featured in this movie. What animal is it and where was it featured?
Was it a dog?
No. That's a good guess, though.
Cat?
No. It's going to be kind of hard because you haven't read much King novels.
Is Frog?
Close. You're close. I'll give you one more. One more try.
Lizard?
No.
Spider?
No.
Shit.
Okay, I'll just tell you. It is a turtle, which is apparently a big thing. I feel like...
Oh, yeah.
There are turtles in so many of his novels, if not all.
That would be like my last guess. I remember but I remember other shows that we watched, like Castle Rock or something. There's like a turtle.
Yeah. So it's a big thing, apparently. A lot of King fans know that a turtle shows up so often in his novels, if not all of them. And it was featured in a painting in the family house.
Wow, they did it subtle.
You gotta throw in all those references. He's got a ton of them. Okay, and then the last question is true or false. The short story by King was originally featured in a short story collection all by Stephen King.
True.
This one is false. So this was actually featured in a March 1973 issue of the Cavalier magazine. Do you remember short stories in magazines?
Yeah, 1973. This shit is that old.
1973. I feel like he had all a huge... string of short stories come out in magazines and stuff like that, and then, you know, it started to evolve into novels. But like, do you remember when there were short stories in magazines?
Yeah, people would, like, write stories and like send them in.
Do you remember magazines? Like, what a time to be.
But that's really cool, like, to just write up a story and just have it in a magazine, and then later on you get famous and then somebody digs it up,
right? And then it was later added to a collection of his short stories. So that's pretty cool. I remember when I was younger, that was like my dream, was to get a short story into a magazine. But now that's probably not relevant.
Yeah. Box office, 82.3 million. Wow.
That's actually a lot. Yeah, I would consider that a success. So we're like jumping back to the first question where we were talking about its theatrical release because the test screenings did so well. And it looks like it did well at the box office too. So I'm actually kind of surprised. But in the same realm, not really, because Sophie Thatcher is the main character here. So I'm sure a lot of people recognize her as well.
They said the movie looks like a $10 to $15 million movie to make, but it cost $35 million.
What?
Because of inflation, I guess.
No way.
And then
it really looked like a low budget movie. Yeah.
And then it made $82.5 million. So they
Whoa.
Yeah, they did good.
Well, it didn't look like a low budget movie. It just looked like not a super high-end movie, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I'm glad it was well-received. It was pretty good.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Okay, so why did we pick this piece of content? I think we have been fans of Stephen King. Not necessarily his novels. We would love to dive into his novels more often, and maybe we'll do this for the podcast as well. But we're more so fans of the adaptations, the visual adaptations, the movies, the shows, and things like that. So we're just generally a fan of King on that level, and we'd like to go deeper. So whenever an adaptation comes out, we just know that we're going to check it out. Also, hearing Stephen King, hearing that name, you're going to want to check it out, right?
Yeah.
You just know that he's gonna crush it.
Yeah, and then it's like his horror is really good when he was drunk.
Yeah.
So you know this was like, I expected like all this to be like his old stuff, and so it was gonna be good.
I feel like his older stuff just gets weirder and weirder in like the best way.
Yeah, like where did he come up with this shit?
And sometimes it's super simple. Like this is a short story, so I'm sure the story itself we can probably read it and it'll be kind of simple in a sense, but also not. Like it's so good.
Yeah.
Also, we are fans of Sophie Thatcher because we recognize her from Yellow Jackets. So that was another appeal. We know that she's a great actress. It was going to be well done no matter what, I feel.
Yep.
So why did we like this movie? And just to like set things clear, we did like this movie, right?
Yeah, we did like it.
Yeah.
It
was good. I think something that I really loved about The Boogeyman was that, and you kind of get the vibe from the name of the movie, right? It had a lot of classic horror tropes. It followed a format that is just very familiar. We talked about this with the Saw episode, but it followed a format that's familiar to horror fans. It's something that is almost comforting. I know comforting is a weird word to use when we're talking about horror, but it's familiar. You kind of know what to expect because you know the formula of how horror works, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and then it's like, I mean, the story was kind of stereotypical.
Yeah.
But this time they showed you more like how the father and the daughter like reacted,
yeah,
to the mom. Yeah, so that, I think that was kind of like new. You don't really see that in movies.
You mean like the trauma that they were kind of dealing and coping with?
Yeah, and how the father was staying away from her.
Yeah, I kind of like that too. I like that they showed a little bit more of the vulnerability of the father. Because like in a lot of movies that are structured in this way in the past, the father is just kind of cagey. And will not, you'll never see that perspective. It just looks like a grouchy man most of the time.
Yeah, but he was actually, in this one, he's emotional with her and talking to her.
You can see that he's really struggling, which I like. I just felt like I was watching something from the early 2000s, but also in a good way because the budget was more, so you could just see that it was done pretty well. I like the house. The house was huge. It was vast. It looked very intricate. Yeah. I kind of wanted to be in that house.
And then the painting.
Yeah.
The painting room was cool.
Yeah.
And then the way that she interacted with her friends.
Yeah.
Like her friend is on her side, but then she's like trying to be popular.
Totally.
Like, yeah. They didn't really like make it too deep into that. I guess they tried to be different from like other, to make it more like a unique story in the 2020s instead, yeah, of making it back like 1990.
Yeah.
You could see that they're like, all right, let's not do that because it's been done too much.
That's true. And another, like, you bring up a good point because teenagers in the 90s were a lot more not open about their feelings and emotions and just societal norms as they are now. And it's really apparent here. Or am I using the right word? It's really obvious here. People are just much more woke. And I don't mean that in an offensive way. I mean that in a good way, in a progressive way.
Yeah. Her friend was trying to make her forget about what happened. But it's like, you can't really forget about that shit. It's such a traumatic thing. And then it happened when she was older too, right? Like recently.
Yeah.
Car accident, yeah, so.
Another thing I liked about this movie is that it was just spooky, good, fun. Like, it was scary. It wasn't like super scary, but it was spooky. And there were some really good jump scares.
Yeah, like when she went into the closet, that shit was... Yeah. I didn't expect that shit to happen. And then they locked her in like dicks.
Yeah. Everything was just high energy at that point. I think that was probably one of the more scarier parts of the movie. But the horror is amped up. Even though it follows like a familiar structure that's kind of dated, the horror was there for sure.
Yeah. Did you like how the monster looked? Was it different or were you just like,
I don't know. I'm always disappointed when it comes to the monster. I prefer to not see the monster and just be scared of the kind of like lingering in the shadows part more than actually seeing the monster.
Yeah, it looked like you would expect it to look like that, like long arms and like,
yeah,
walking around like an insect. Yeah. Kind of shit. Yeah,
I feel like it's probably accurate to the story because Stephen King likes to do that kind of.
Yeah, I remember this is 1973, so he probably came up with this shit first and then people started.
Oh, you mean like
the idea of how it looked, and then people made their monsters afterwards.
Yeah.
So he must have been the creator. You don't know.
Yeah, I get what you mean. Like a lot of people take the inspiration from his kinds of monsters. That totally makes sense. It wasn't really the part that I remember the most. The scary parts that I remember the most are when like the anticipation, the leading up stuff.
It wasn't like a monster that that you'll remember. It's like whatever. It's like one of these big monster shits that just jump out.
Yeah.
I think they were like using fire or something and they were shooting at it and the shit went nice. So I'm like, what? How do you stop this shit? But anyways, we'll go to that.
Did we figure out a solution? I can't remember what the solution was by the end of it.
I don't know if it's like a disease and you have to like pass it on to the next person or some shit like that. Yeah,
that's so
it's
what like... it was. Because it was kind of feeding off of other people's trauma.
Yeah.
And that's why it stuck onto this family.
It was a wife and husband, right? And the husband came and he passed it on. And then the husband killed himself.
Yes.
So it was just living with them. Like, that was the weird part.
I think there was a bit of an explanation with the wife of the original family that passed it on to the main characters. Where she was saying, like, there's so many versions of it or so many iterations of it kind of all coexisting at the same time. So while they're passing this one along one another, there's other versions passing along to other families too.
Yeah.
Almost like a disease.
Yeah. And then it was like, it was here in her place. And then it took a walk and went over to,
to I think her other house. I think that's how they were trying to explain it. They were trying to say, like, this is not the one singular family dealing with trauma. It's happening all over the place, and variations of this monster is all over the place, which we can kind of look at in a symbolic way if you think about it. But yeah, it was kind of a weird explanation, and we can kind of segue perfectly into our dislikes, because first of all, let's go back to the...
Hold on. I like that ball that she had. The glowing ball that her sister had?
Yeah.
What? I want to get that glowing ball.
That is so random. We're talking about...
Like, you know how they put, like, objects in... movies?
Yeah.
And that is the fucking object. That is the object.
You mean, like, a product placement?
Not a product placement. Like, you know when they put, like, every horror movie, there's, like, something that's fucking weird and cool and you want it.
Like a product placement.
Like, this ball. So when I saw this ball, I was looking that shit up on Amazon. I was
let's give the audience context. Ian is talking about a ball of light, like just a tech product in one of the kids' rooms. That's all he's talking about right now.
Yeah, but it was like such a bright ball, and then it was like, I'm sure that shit changed different colors, and then she was rolling it, like that's a prop, and then she was rolling it, and then it was moving around by itself because the boogeyman was moving it. But it's like, you expect that light to save you, and that shit is just rolling around like
You're right. It was smart. It was a smart use of a product in a movie because you needed the light. So yeah, you're right.
I want that ball. I'll put it on my wish list.
Clearly, we are entertained and amazed by such little things. Us millennials just, you know, experiencing magazines and all. But anyway, back to the dislikes. You mentioned briefly about things not being really, like, stand out or special about this movie. And I think that's one of my dislikes. There's nothing particularly special about it. I know I also mentioned in the likes that I like the classic format. But we can take the classic format and switch it up or add something unique to it and make it super brand new. And I don't think I get that in this movie.
Yeah, like, maybe if they made it, like, gory,
maybe it would be something unexpected, almost like, you know, the classic format goes one step after the other and then something is just so out of place that it shocks you. That would be kind of cool to see. Or maybe just, I don't know, just a little bit more of a newness.
Yeah, it was just like, it wasn't like it was bland, but it was like this is the main character, this is the horror, this is why she has a horror, like, you know what I mean? It was like,
yeah,
it was like written down in steps. It wasn't totally like, oh shit, let's go here, something crazy is gonna happen.
It's like, you can watch that movie and you know, as a horror lover, exactly what's gonna happen step by step as it progresses. And that also segues into another dislike of mine, because as it was progressing and I knew what was going on, I was waiting for like the montage moment where you figure things out and the solution starts to formulate. And in the solution was the wife of the original family just lurking around in her house with no lights on for how many years? How long have those children been dead?
She has no idea what to do.
What was she doing in there? Why did nobody know anything about her?
She did know what to do, but then her shit didn't even work.
What was she doing in the house in the dark all the time? Was she leaving? Was she getting groceries? What was going on?
Yeah, remember she said how it lives in the dark, so she has to keep lighting candles. So I'm just like, okay, why don't you just turn the lights on?
So,
or buy some high beam lights.
Practically, it was weird. It was like you walked into an abandoned house and this woman was just living there the entire time.
With candles.
With candles. Also, and was figuring out the solution to this movie the entire time. Like, what?
Yeah, also it had like that stereotypical shit where the parents never believe you that there's a monster. Dad didn't believe you, like, yeah, we know.
Yeah. And then also, if the wife of the original family who was, like, cursed or whatever, or that had this monster following them, if the wife was there, and the husband was also there, because the husband went to the therapist, why did he kill himself then? Were they not on the same page? She's over here trying to figure out a solution while he's over here trying to pass it on to someone else. Were they on the same page? Were they kind of creeping in the corner of their house the entire time? It just didn't make sense. And it was weird.
I guess that's how he was trying to get away with it. Trying to get away from it. He was like, here, you take it. And then let me see if I can get back with my wife.
Not even. He killed himself.
And then he goes kill himself.
Well, he definitely planned on passing it on to one person and then ditching his wife, leaving her to just kind of deal with it. What a horrible dude, actually.
Yeah.
What?
That shit didn't work out. I mean, like, that shit didn't work out good with the story.
Yeah, it kind of didn't make sense. It definitely felt like a quick wrap up answer to the end of the movie because they needed to wrap it up and it just didn't actually make sense.
Did you really care like how she was like grieving for her mom, or you're just like,
no, I cared about the base story. I did. It's just and Sophie Thatcher, she's a great actress. So and also the father was a great, there are great actors in this movie. And so like the performance is done well. It's just the formula of the story, perhaps it's the script. It's just kind of superficial in a sense, and so you can only go so far with that.
Yeah, because you've seen it happen many times. It didn't break the mold, but it's a good story to like to have a memory of like an old school horror movie.
Yeah, it's kind of, this is such a weird word to say, but it's kind of cozy. Is
that cozy horror?
You know what I mean? It's like a comforting kind of read. Like, you know when people are reading books, they go for something like light thrillers. And you just know that you're going to read something familiar, but it's still a thriller. It's kind of like that. Because I could watch that and be like, oh yeah, you know, I'll just watch that over dinner. It's a chill movie. As opposed to something like Talk to Me. Talk to Me is not a light watch. You know?
But what, did anybody die in this movie? Besides her mom?
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like important characters that you give a shit about.
Oh, you mean as it progressed? No, yeah. It was mostly just like scares.
It wasn't even... Like, you know, you expect, like, the movie, everybody expected in the movie that somebody's going to die, like, one of the main characters, but none of the main characters died.
I mean, alive. They definitely got in, like, tricky situations, so it was, like, close to it, but it wasn't that intense.
I would still recommend the movie, though.
Like we said, I personally wouldn't say it's completely lame, it's nothing stand out, but it's a cozy horror. I'm going to say cozy horror, I'm just going to go with that.
Yeah, comfortably under a blanket horror.
Get your hot cocoa and watch a little Stephen King horror movie. The question that I have for the audience is kind of a classic question. Are you a Stephen King fan? And what's your favorite Stephen King screen adaptation? Rapid fire, what is your favorite? I'll say mine. It's Castle Rock.
I like it.
It. Which one?
The new one.
Yeah. The chapter one or the chapter two?
Chapter one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good one.
That shit made me shit myself.
They had some good jump scares in that one. Yeah. Well, you let us know in the discussion post that we post on Instagram. Don't forget to check that after you listen or watch this episode. We always put a question in that discussion post and we share some like behind the scenes and stuff about whatever piece of media that we're talking about. But thank you so much for listening this week. If you like today's episode and you want to hear more from us, do us a favor, share this podcast with a friend or a family member, a fellow horror lover. That just helps get the word out about us, and then we can continue doing the show. And tune in next Wednesday, because we're talking about a demo of a video game. That's right, just a demo that is deemed one of the best horror video games ever, spawning dozens, if not more, games to follow its exact format, PT. But for now,
we'll see you in the kitchen with a knife.